You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. Back table of The Comedy Cellar. My name is Noam Dwarman. I'm the owner of The Comedy Cellar. I'm going to turn it over to my friend, Mr. Dan Natterman.
Could you raise the volume on my headset, please? Now?
Yeah, well, you're just sitting here, like, doing nothing. You think maybe you could...
I'm not technically oriented.
Really?
We have a jam-packed show, Noam. We have with us Ian Fidance.
That's right.
Did I pronounce that right, or is it Fidance?
You got it, baby.
Fidance, like romance without Fidance.
That's right. You can't have romance without Fidance,
and he is
baby.
Here amongst us.
That's right. Thank you.
He is risen.
That's right. Every day.
And we'll be talking to him later. He's a comic in New York that I actually don't know very well, but we'll get to know him.
All right.
John Lasser, regular at the Comedy Cellar and regular on our podcast, is here. And he's got some interesting,
hey,
episode
Jeff.
That happened to him this week. And we have Stephen Calabria, who is our producer.
Hola.
And he doesn't usually say a lot, but we'd like to have him here.
Where's my wife, Ellie? Where's Juanita? Go ahead, Dan. Sorry.
First of all, Noam, I just briefly wanted to discuss, and maybe we'll talk about it more later. Vegas is back.
Vegas is
was
back,
having
baby.
Problems. The room, the Comedy Cellar in Las Vegas, was having problems. Can you give us a brief overview of what happened and how it was resolved?
Is that what you meant by talking about Vegas?
Yes. Well, I said to you, can we talk in more detail about Vegas? If not, then we'll just leave it at that and say it is back.
But the problems were that we had some differences of opinion
with the Rio Casino people.
With the Rio Casino people, and but they were very nice. So I think we worked it out.
Okay, so you don't want to go into further detail.
No, that's the truth.
But Noam is being very obsessive.
Like he nailed it.
I would bore you with the actual details of the the
well,
issues,
I don't think it would be boring to me. But I know you think that anything that has nothing to do with Trump is boring. But
just in the divvying up of certain expenses and how things would be handled and trying to get us on an even footing so that we have a chance to be successful there. And by success, I really just mean break even and put on some great comedy shows and have an excuse to go out to Vegas 3-4 times a year, you know.
Well, how are the reservations for tonight? Because I know you've been checking those resis like every 2 seconds, like an obsessive compulsive
disorder.
Well,
the thing is, they're so far, but they come into at the last minute, and it's 3 hours behind. So the next 3 hours is when all the action is. But we're okay tonight.
You're not quite at break even yet for tonight.
Though. No, not yet. But also, I think is tonight a hockey playoff in Vegas?
Oh,
that affects us too.
All right, so Vegas is back. So all of our listeners, if you're in Vegas, check out Comedy Cellar Vegas. Different shows every week. John Lasseter has had a hell of a week.
Oh, yeah.
Not in Vegas, but in Atlantic City, which is the East Coast Vegas, sort of, kind of.
Yes.
I'm trying to make a smooth transition, but there's no
way. Nailing it, Dan. Doing great. Doing great.
But apparently, are you aware of what happened with John out in...
I'm aware, but let him tell it.
Okay.
I'll tell it. No, go ahead, John.
No, long week, man. I was let go from a casino in Atlantic City, man, from a week of shows over essentially telling a Trump joke.
What, this is the Borgata, or we'd rather not elaborate?
Yeah, I'd rather not right now.
I'll just say
a casino in Atlantic City.
Old TMZ Dan.
TMZ Dan.
I thought.
Is this the Borgata where you were playing last weekend or somewhere else? We don't want to elaborate.
Go ahead. So what was the Trump joke? You told one Trump
the
joke?
Trump, essentially, yeah, it was just a Trump joke. It was a Trump bit that, that did the damn thing. I mean, keep in mind now, every night, first of all, this is a much older crowd. You know, I guess that's just the way it is at casinos. It was a much older crowd, man. But every night, there were probably around 25 to 30 people that were walking. Before I started the show, they told me that no matter who's there when the last guy goes on, some of these people have been there long enough, they're going to walk out. So we're not sure exactly how many of that 30 people or so, but the last night, so Saturday, the crowd walks, whatever percentage walks, Sunday, whatever percentage walks, Monday, whatever percentage walks, but Monday they come back in. Yes, after they walk, after they do their boo, when I say Trump.
So you've been doing the Trump joke all weekend?
Oh, yeah.
So, and no
yeah,
problem.
Yeah, I was halfway through the gig.
Oh, halfway through
yeah,
the gig.
Yeah, I'm halfway. Yeah,
and you've been doing that joke.
I've been doing, of course, yeah.
What's the joke?
Exact same joke. Well, the joke is just way too long. I mean, it's a 7-8 minute bit. I posted it on my Instagram so you can watch the whole joke that he was funny. I posted the whole thing so that way people don't wonder, was it some demonic, you know what I mean? But I can tell you but what
the
gist of the joke is that Trump supporters are hypocritical, that only things that they wouldn't let other people get away with, they let this guy get away with.
Okay, so that's the gist of the joke.
Yes,
okay.
That's the whole gist of the joke.
Is that the one where you said, like, if Michelle Obama couldn't speak English?
Had an accent,
yeah,
right,
okay,
like
yeah.
Melania, Republicans would be calling her un-American. That's the gist of the joke, the
Got
whole
it.
Joke.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Yeah, someone told me you were saying Trump voters were baby rapists. That's
see, that's how rumors get started. Exactly. So I posted the joke.
I don't even the joke he told so far. I don't get up and walk out myself.
Yeah, what's funny about that?
So I posted the whole thing, man, so that people would be able to make your own decision. You know what I mean? But so the group though that come back in, and then they wait after the show. You know, and they're like, hey, he can't talk about the president. He can't talk about our president, and they were heated up, man.
Okay, well, can I tell you what's interesting about this whole situation? Maybe I'm not supposed to talk about it. This is what I gleaned from this situation.
Okay, what did you glean?
He's caught in the middle of a strange balance of power fight over there in because the people who booked the Borgata, I believe, are the people who own Gotham.
Yes.
And
but we don't know if it's a Borgata.
Oh, whatever. And they are responsible to the people who hired them. So now Lasser gets up there and starts saying that Trump supporters have an extra chromosome or whatever he says. And now some people walk out. So the people at the top, the Borgata people, the Gotham is worried about losing their gig. So what happens in that combustible situation is that probably the Gotham people overreact. And drop the axe. I don't know anything. He can correct it, and they drop the axe.
Well, see, I don't know, because I was called Tuesday morning and said, hey, man, they're going to let you go for the rest of
who's
the week.
They?
The guys who book it, who do own Gotham.
So they're the guy, and they called you, and they let you go?
Yes.
And did they tell you that the people above them told them that they had to let you go?
Yes.
Okay, so then I'm wrong. So then the people at Borgata.
Well, but I'm just but saying, they, to, you, yeah. to your point, I'm saying that I'm just telling you the information that I got. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, so, that's probably true. So
you've been telling that joke all week, and people have been mad at it.
Yes.
So what was the straw that broke the camel's back?
I haven't a clue.
Wait, so I'm
you know
the guy.
I mean?
And
the
they couldn't.
But it wasn't like I came in on Saturday and they were like, that joke is so grotesque, we got to get this guy out of here.
You were doing this all week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now I'm John Lasser, and they tell me this, and I'd be like, oh, no, you don't need to fire me. I just won't do the joke anymore. Did you say that?
Yeah.
And what did they say to that?
They were just like, yo, man, they're not going to use you for the rest of the week.
But did you get the same money? Did you get paid fully through the week?
Yeah.
Then who cares?
You know what, man? You know what? Yeah, I know, man. I mean, you know what? And if it's going to come to that, then, you know what I mean? Like, what have we got left? Seriously.
He didn't even mean that. He just...
Oh, the hell I didn't.
I mean, if it comes to that, then what have we got left?
So you said, I won't do the joke anymore. And they said, I'm sorry, you know, it's out of our hands or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah. My first response was, I mean, clearly we know it's about the Trump joke because that's the point of contention in every set. Then I move on.
Oh, they didn't even make that clear that it was about the Trump joke?
Oh, we all know what it was.
Right, but did they say it?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we all know what it was. But I mean, at that point, they were just like, yo, man, they took you off the show. You know what I mean? So there was really nothing I could do about it. I mean, the room started spinning. I was like, you can't be serious.
Okay, so then you went on social media.
And said, I go on the social media and I say, hey, man, I was down here last night. I did a Saturday show, Sunday show. This is exactly what I said because it was only 60 seconds. That's how much time I had. Saturday show went good. Sunday show went good. Last night there were some people who booed, got up, left, came, waited for me after the show. So, unfortunately... If you're coming down here for the Tuesday show, the Wednesday show, the Thursday show, some of you are buying hotel rooms, I'm not going to be here. So please don't, you know, buy those tickets, unfortunately. I thanked the guys who booked me, and I said, thank you guys for all your support. I appreciate you. That's all the time I had. I was thanking people because I had already posted that I was a little upset about the people who were waiting for me the night before. So lots of people had started chiming in. Hey, John, sorry about what you're going through down there.
All right. So then you did that.
A whole 1 minute thing.
Hold up. So you posted that, and then a shitstorm started to brew. What happened?
Well, after I posted, I was taken off the show. Yes, every comedian. You know, other than Dan Natterman, was upset.
Dan heard you got paid.
Every other person that gives a rat's ass about comedy was like, you can't let this happen because this could get ugly.
Right, and then you get a call saying, hey, you got to lower the heat on us.
Yes.
That's the interesting part. Okay, come on, tell that part.
So then after that, I got a call saying, hey, John, this could turn into like, Which it could have, a media shitstorm. So in the interest of, first of all, I'm friends with these guys, the guys that booked this joint. I've been friends with these guys for a decade.
Yeah, longer than you know us.
For a long time. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I was like, hey, man, in the interest of, I care about you, Noam. You know what I mean? I wouldn't want something unnecessary. I was like, you know what? Let's just pull this shit down, you know, let it die out and move on, you know?
Because they were worried about what?
I think that they were worried about continuing the gig.
They were worried about losing their gig, booking the workout.
No. I think that they were worried about a media storm in terms of, you know, because first thing that's going to happen is people are going to be like hashtag, you know, the hashtag boycott. You know what this environment is like.
People
are like off with their fucking heads. And I was like, I didn't feel like the people that I was working with at the casino, I know that they were enjoying me.
Right.
So I don't know where this came from. Do you know what I mean?
It could have been that somebody very high roller said, I want Laster gone or I'm never coming back to this casino again. Somebody that was in the audience said maybe a big high roller, maybe an Arab sheik or a Hong Kong businessman.
You know, they love Trump.
Very much could have been. I mean, you know what I mean? I'm not privy to that information.
Right, but that could have well have been. It says Laster goes or we're not coming back to this casino.
Yeah.
All right, So go on. So they ask you to take the stuff off social media.
And I was like, you know what? Let's put an end to it anyway. So I pulled the shit down. I also
they're afraid it's gonna get to Hannibal, and you know when Hannibal goes public on something, heads roll.
Yes.
Cosby's in jail.
You know what's funny is Hannibal had already seen
there you go.
What was going on. So he texts me. You know, comedians are always joking around. So I get a text from Hannibal the following morning that said, heard you got some open dates.
So you lost this. You lost this weekend.
I lost a whole week. They took me off a whole week.
Okay. Well, again, I say to you.
I remember you telling me about that gig. You were excited.
Yo, it was relaxing as hell.
Yeah. Wait, so you took it down.
Yes.
And then, so then, why are you here talking about it now?
Let me tell you why. I took it down. Right. So the reason that I'm sitting here is because I go to a party of a guy who works here at the Cellar, my buddy Sean Donnelly.
We know.
And
you.
I walk in. There's 70, 80 comedians in this joint. And I walk
in. What was this? I didn't get invited to that. Do you know about that, Dan?
Over at Patty's.
No,
it was Sean Donnelly's birthday.
Sean Donnelly's birthday party.
You probably got an invite.
You probably did.
Via Facebook.
Well, yeah. I don't pay attention to Facebook invites. I need a personal invite.
Yeah, me too. Go ahead.
And there's...
I really can't get off of this, though. Go ahead.
Excuse me. There's 70, 80 comedians there, but I'm walking through the party and people are like...
70 or 80 comedians were gathered who I didn't even know about?
Go ahead. Crazy. You missed it, Noam.
Well, you invited Jeff.
And people...
Go ahead.
And people are in there saying that, hey, John... We heard that you cussed out the crowd. We heard that you threatened people. And I was like, no, someone said, which really hurt my feelings, oh, yeah, we heard that you were drunk and it was a shit show. And I was like, no, this was over a Trump joke. Do you know what I mean? But it dawned on me like, oh, my God, I took those posts down. The flames, you know, the fires had started on a bunch of different places online. So these people are having these debates. And I think that what happened was comedians were like, well, to be taken off a week of shows, he had to have done something.
Yeah. And well, can I say what you're sensitive about? Because you've had problems in the past. You want to talk about that or no? We can even cut that out.
What do you mean? The drinking?
Yeah.
Oh, who cares?
I think that it would be reasonable that you're afraid now that you're not drinking that this could conjure up an impression of you being drinking again and being unreliable in some way, and then you could lose gigs in the future.
Well, to that point, I think not only that, but I mean, I know people that were close to me that were worried about that.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean?
So you have a very good reason to want to push back on this.
Very much so. Yeah. But I mean, in addition to that, imagine like if my comrades, keep in mind, I'm in a birthday party with 7 or 80
you are
guys.
Go ahead.
No one wasn't invited to.
Yeah. With 7 or 80 guys that know me.
But I'm saying
guys that know me better than that, they were already starting that with swishing in their head.
Yeah,
imagine the person that doesn't know me.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
What the fuck
your reputation is very, very important.
And that's all I got.
My assumption was simply that you told a Trump joke and pissed off somebody. I certainly didn't assume anything further. No.
If you had been invited to the party, you might have been privy to the real rumor.
No. What would it take? Now you're booking a week-long gig in Vegas or a Wednesday through Sunday gig in Vegas.
Yeah.
Do you imagine you might fire a comic from that gig, and under what circumstances? What would it take for you to fire a comic from a gig, a week-long gig?
Well, if I was ordered to fire it, if I had no choice, I would have no choice, right? If I did have a choice, because the casinos do have, in all their contracts, they have the final say.
The ultimate say.
That's for sure. But I would say, listen, okay, if it's about a Trump joke, I'll make sure he doesn't tell it again. That's it. And if that didn't work, then, you know.
But would you go as far as saying, as censoring a comic that told a joke that somebody important didn't like, or would you
not
say
in,
you know?
In the cellar, I wouldn't, but in Vegas, I could be contractually obligated to.
Well, are you contractually obligated?
Yeah, yeah. In Vegas, they have the final say about things like that.
Have you ever censored a comic here?
No, I don't think I have. I've stopped booking them when they told Holocaust or anything about Jews, but otherwise, otherwise, I'm kidding.
He was joking.
No, I don't think I ever censored anybody here. I've asked like Nick DiPaolo to go easy on cancer victims from time to time, you know, things like that. But he doesn't have to do his bald jokes, but other than that, for the most part, no.
Have you had any other problems, John, with Trump jokes outside of New York City? Because in New York City, it's open season on Trump, pretty much in Manhattan. Whatever you say about Trump,
here's the funny part about that. There were, you know, after you do these shows, you're still bumping into these people in the casinos. So I bumped into tons of people that were like, hey, bro, I was at the show last night. I'm a Trump supporter, but that was funny as hell. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Even people that in the beginning cringe were like, but it was funny as hell.
Well, you don't say anything that outrageous about it. You just say, look, if Obama talked like Barack a good man, then the Republicans would be all over it.
Right.
No, but he is doing something which I think is a risky business, which is that it's not really a Trump joke. It's a Trump supporter joke. And that's a little bit different because you're not making fun of Trump. You're making fun of the people in the audience who support him.
Not true. Both things are mostly making fun of Trump and at the tail end of it, the supporters.
Right. But the people...
That, they didn't even wait for that.
Okay, because
they didn't even make it to that part.
When I've been in a position where somebody's making fun of whatever politics I agreed with, it does strike me as different. They make fun of, you know, like I was a huge Bernie Sanders supporter. So if they make fun of Bernie Sanders, it doesn't really bother me. But they make fun of how stupid the people who believe in socialism are. You know, it's like, go fuck yourself, you know?
Right.
So because you all of a sudden you feel that you're being made fun of.
Yo, even the people, and I can say this. I do believe that if that last group had done the same thing as the other groups, boo, got up and walked out and kept walking,
yeah.
I'm not sure that we're sitting here. But they waited and they were like adamant that I didn't have the right to talk about the president.
Yeah.
You know, which was disheartening, but I didn't think that it would end up in, a week of gigs is now down the tubes. And my greatest fear, to be perfectly honest with you, was the way that it felt at the end of this, especially when I was walking around that party, and then I'm starting to hear the rumor mill cooking was, okay, well, why don't we just next time put in the contract no political humor? Because it was... Someone, that was one of the things that someone said in the party. Well, we heard that it was kind of like that they asked you in the contract, it said in the contract, no political humor, and you did it anyway.
Because that wasn't true.
Not at all.
Who else is on the bill?
Not at all. Nick Griffin and Megan Hanley.
So why didn't you scream about race? Like, why didn't you say you're firing me because I'm black? Believe me, they back right down when you know that.
I I was thinking the same thing.
They will shut the fuck up and they'll take it. They'll bend over and take it. You just have to make it. I'm going public.
4 weeks of gigs.
You want Mr. White Nick Griffin, and you don't want me.
You know what's so funny, man? And I could have played that card.
John Lester.
But you know what's so funny? I'm not that guy.
Be that guy. You got a career to worry about, John.
Well, I hardly think this is a career. Is a career stumbling block.
He could have made a name for himself. He'd be famous all over the world if he did that.
Well,
he did
get some publicity out of this.
He'd have a residency at the Borgata if he played his cards right.
Yo, you know what's so funny? As fast as they walked out, right, I was thinking to myself, they really just want those people back in the casino anyway. They should have gave me a residency. Like, this guy will get the hell out of here. He'll run them back on the floor.
Are you sure it wasn't because you're black?
It's not too late, John.
Now that you mention it, Norm, I think you got a point there.
I am black.
I am black.
Yeah. Nick Griffin is really mighty white.
And Megan. Oh, my goodness.
Who's Megan? I don't know Megan.
Very white.
Sounds mighty
well,
white.
Well, I would have just enjoyed the week off, but I am maybe in the minority here.
Dan, have you ever lost a gig because of jokes you were telling?
I was never fired from a gig. I was demoted.
That was a good one, guys. I'm sorry. I didn't hear it. What was it? When people didn't laugh.
I was demoted because of that. Because early in my career, I said I could do a half hour of comedy, and I could not. And
that was here, by the way, that you lost.
No.
That was Esty. Esty stopped using you one time.
She stopped using me a couple times. I was in and out of here for a while.
Yeah.
But I was demoted from the middle, or the feature act, which is... does a half hour for our listeners that aren't familiar with comedy terms like that. And I was demoted to MC. I was never fired from a gig.
Never fired from a gig.
I was never fired from a gig.
I feel demoted. I MC quite a bit.
Well, on the road, you know that the MC outside of the city is the lowest position. Yeah. We do the least amount of time, they do the least amount of time and get the least amount of money. And I was demoted, therefore, from the feature spot to the MC spot.
But you said you didn't have the chops, so that's not really the same thing.
No, I was early on. They said, can you do a half hour? I said, can I do a half hour? No. I said, yeah, of course. And I think we all bite off more than we can chew at the beginning because we don't realize just how long a fucking half hour is when you ain't got it.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I
felt lonely as shit when that happened to me. I did. The room started spinning. I really, really felt like I was on an island. Sitting there in that room by myself and somebody's with a week of nothingdom.
Well, as for me now, see, this is where we differ. We're obviously different people. A week of nothing, this sounds good to me.
Dan, nobody likes to be fired. Come on now.
No, I know nobody likes to be fired.
Especially for something the guise of being able to say whatever you want, because it's through humor.
I understand nobody
That's
likes to be
most
fired.
Fucked up part.
But what John is saying, in addition to being fired, is he had a week of nothingness. And I'm saying that a week of nothingness is fine with me.
A week of nothingness is fine with me if I choose it. But I mean, after having been fired, I mean, there's something about
take a staycation.
There's something about it though that kind of felt like someone saying you don't know how to do your job.
Mm. I hear what you're saying, but they weren't saying that. They were saying you do your job so well that you're ruffling feathers. And if looked at that way, let's face it.
Well, I wasn't. But hear me out. I was totally fine with the ruffling feathers part, the people booing and walking out. Mm-hmm. That was the ruffling feathers part. I'm cool with that, and I kept going.
Right.
There's 1,000 people in here. 30 or 40 walked out. What is that, 2.5%, 3%? You know what I mean? That's the other 900-something people sat there and were like, this guy's funny as hell. The manager said that he was like, this is the funniest guy I may have seen here. Called his wife and asked her to come the next night. Invited his family out.
Was he black?
No, white guy. Oh,
so okay. You know.
Both of them.
So you don't take.
So it wasn't like. And keep it.
Gotta
mind,
find
and,
a racial.
Both of those nights, people had walked out. So I knew I was already doing the feather ruffling. But I'm saying
did it make you want to go in deeper?
No, but you know what? The funny part was I was actually not going to do the joke anymore.
Why?
So that was the last night of the joke. And I'll tell you why. I used to do Rikers Island, right?
As a comedian.
He was open for Johnny Cash.
and we would go in there between Thanksgiving and the New Year. But we would do shows during the day, but it was just to uplift their spirits. I go in there, do my set. At the end of the set, correction officer's talking loud. I say something to him. The guys go crazy. Second night, I go in there, most of my set, start talking about the Crushing Gods. Guys go crazy. The third night, I was like, fuck it. Why don't I just do this for them? But I was in that same mindset in Atlantic City where I was just going to say, hey, man, fuck it. Let's let these old people have a good time. You know what I mean?
Right,
so
right.
I was not going to do – that was the very last night that joke was going to be told anyway. It just happened to blow up that night.
Well,
very funny you compared old people in prison and casino to Rikers
Island.
You know
what I'm saying? It's a novelty gig. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not regular comedy connoisseurs.
Right, right, right.
So let's just serve them up what they want here. You know what I mean? That's the way I felt about it. That was the last night that that joke was going to be told anyway.
Yeah, for some reason, pleasing an audience is very low on the list of what comedians worry about. Dummies. It kind of matters.
It started moving up the charts.
You know, when we when any of us buy tickets to see some entertainment, we would like the performer to care about whether or not we're pleased by it. So stupid. Anyway,
yeah, but you're only into it if you're caring about it.
Yeah. You know? So listen, I think it's terrible. But you know, we've been talking about this for a long time, and I was kind of early to the table on this. We are heading as a society down a terrible path where everybody wants to pass yay or nay on whatever comes out of somebody else's mouth, and they feel tremendously entitled to any reaction they want, you know, and it's spreading and growing as opposed to kind of a cultural moire or commitment to that. I just say, okay, you know, it's good to have a kind of a thick skin.
You know what?
Let people say what they want at the end of the world.
Right.
Which used to be the case.
But no, what kills me about
Maybe that didn't used to be the case.
I don't think it ever was the case.
What kills me about that point that you're making is that was the argument that was being made by the right.
Yeah.
So for those same people to then say, yeah, we're tired of this political correctness. People should be able to say more of what they want. And then say, but when this guy talks about the leader of that, throw him out.
No, but I'm saying is I wish. Yeah, you're right. Of course, it's hypocrites,
you know what I mean?
On the left and right.
That's what the joke is about. The hypocrisy of these people.
At least, basically, the right makes the argument of free speech these days, and the left actually doesn't even believe in it. But
go see the joke and tell me what you think. And he was funny.
We got Ian Fidance. We brought in. I don't know Ian. How do you? It's Fidance. You mentioned that. Ian Fidance.
Is Jeff on the show?
No, he's just here.
Ross. Oh. So Ross, you want to come sit down? In the meantime, well, good. Ian, why is Ian here?
What's up?
Because Stephen
booked
him.
He's an interesting fellow.
And Stephen felt he was an interesting guy. He looks like, I look at Ian, I'm thinking, don't eat
like
the
Ross
brown acid.
He didn't even warrant a text message with an intro for him that I usually get.
He's a comedian.
Oh, he looks like.
Come on, Steve.
He looks like a Woodstock guy.
All right.
He's got a mustache, curly hair. He looks right. Am I right? He looks like
a substitute teacher on Room 222 from the 70s, that TV sitcom, you know?
I used to be a teacher in the city.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
But anyway.
In fact, my teacher, Mr. Temple, when I went to PS 75.
We also have Ross Bennett. He just sat down.
Ross, how do
you do? We're talking to Ian Fidance.
What's up?
But what's interesting about Ian, according to Mr. Stephen Calabria, is that his thing, sexually speaking, is transgendered females. Is that correct?
Ah, why did you tell me? That's a good angle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is this something you wanted to...
Thank God it's not awkward.
Yeah, why not? It ain't awkward.
So we're talking about women
trying to meet up with one later tonight.
Women who are transitioning to men?
No. Women that were born men and transitioned into women.
XY.
Okay.
Yeah. Male to female transgender.
Now, what's so good about that?
I just like it. I don't know what it is. I'm bi, so I like dudes as well. But I like my hierarchy goes women, trans women, men. I don't know what it is. I think it's maybe the taboo of it, but I've always been attracted to kind of.
Well, if you're bi, it makes perfect sense. Obviously,
It's right in the middle. So it's
like having a buffet.
Oh, really?
With just one person.
If you get the trans,
all you can eat,
the trans woman home in bed. And you don't know yet whether she's had the operation or not, because you're not allowed to ask. Are you saying, come on?
I'm rolling the dice. And if they had the operation, she's kicking rocks. Get out.
Oh, you like it, so you want the dick.
I want the dick.
But no.
I'm driving a Trans Am. It's got to be stick shift.
Would you ever just ask a regular gay guy to put on a dress for you?
No.
What's the difference?
If I can't find too many trans gals, then maybe. But
he likes men and women, so I'm assuming that if he has a penis, great. If he has a vagina, that's fine too.
Well, if a trans woman's going to get the surgery and get a vagina, I'm just going to go with a woman. I want the penis. I don't know.
Now, this is really interesting.
That actually makes it interesting. The way I was born. I've tried to figure it out, you know. When I was in, like, third grade, there was this kid, he and I would fool around. I just drew a picture of a woman with a penis and put it on his desk. And was like, hey, you like that? What do you think, huh? I don't know where it came from. It just exists.
Well, you're not alone. There's a lot of men that are heterosexual or identify as heterosexual.
I talk about it on stage, and dudes come up to me like, hey, man, that was great. Can I talk to you over here? I'm like, yeah. They're like, hey, man, I've been with trans. If you tell anyone, I'll kill you.
How much did you have to pay in therapy to get to the point where you're this comfortable talking about
this? I've been in therapy a long time.
Oh, man.
Yeah, long
time. It's worked. You've gotten your money's worth.
But if you're comfortable being gay or bi...
Yes.
There's no additional. It wouldn't be any worse or weirder.
No. In my home, there would be. I'm fully prepared for one of my children being gay or bi. But
you're a failure as a parent.
Yeah, but you're saying
that's an extra leap.
You're a potential failure as a parent.
Yeah.
You're saying
my kid better be trans or else.
You're saying, Noam, that you'd be more. It would be more odd for you. For your kid to like, for your son to like men, than for your son to like trans women, that would be weirder for you.
The irony is, I'd like to say some things about how I actually feel, knowing full well that I could be a victim of my own prejudices. I'm only human, but I don't think I'm going to get the Joy Reid treatment afterwards if I say the wrong thing. Then I'll just be able to say, like, I don't really think I said it, and everybody will just forgive me.
Yeah, whatever. Just
out with it. But I will say that. Something inside me, and I think it comes down to personal experience, that I've always known gay guys my whole life, and I always saw they were basically just the same as anybody else. Well, they were a little flamboyant sometimes, whatever it is, but the trans people I've known or I've worked with, they were different. They were not just the same as you and me. He's making the universal sign for crazy with his fingers. So
Ross, why would you do that?
So I know that we're supposed to assume that because we know or pretty much know that gay people are congenitally gay, either whether it's something in the womb or genetics, whatever it is, that we're supposed to now it's kind of like a protective coating against bigotry to assume that trans people must be born that way too. But I've always wondered, do we know that trans people are born that way? Could trans not be the result of some sort of trauma or something?
But Noam, what does that have to do
with... There's a phrase called transgender.
In case you didn't follow where I'm going. So if my children were to go in that direction,
I'm not saying your children are trans. They just like trans women.
But the whole trans thing, I would somehow worry, is this just... normal, as it were, or did I go wrong somewhere? Or did something happen to my butterfly effect?
Or could it be trans
raising them in Greenwich Village? Could that have anything to do with it?
Or did something happen in school that I don't know about?
Like a butterfly effect that turns them trans or whatever.
They're being raised in the suburbs, actually.
Oh my God.
I'm not saying that's the case. I'm not bigoted about this at all.
But that's a healthy fear, and it doesn't make you wrong or bad to think those things.
Well, let me tell you what I think about black people.
Ian, it makes you better.
go ahead.
But again, Ian is not trans. He just likes trans.
Right.
And I have to confess to enjoy... not well,
drum roll, please.
To enjoying videos in which trans women have sex with women.
Yeah, it's hot.
That I do enjoy.
In how?
With their penis.
Intercourse.
The seed has been planted, my friend.
That is a trans woman having intercourse with a woman. Not with a man, but with a woman. To me, is quite hot. Why wouldn't it be, after all? I enjoy watching a man have sex with a woman. Why not a woman having sex with a woman?
The reason is obvious,
the reason is not obvious. The reason is not.
Then why not have a dog with women? I mean...
Come on.
Jesus, well, because a dog doesn't have a set of tits.
First of all, some of these trans women look...
No, I'll tell you why. Because usually what you watch is a reflection of the sex that you're interested in. I'm not comparing trans to dogs. I'm saying once you start watching that... It's like,
you watch men having sex with women. You enjoy that. So why would it be weird to enjoy watching trans women having sex with women?
Because it's a trans... It's not my thing. So in some way...
Well, men are not your thing either, but you enjoy watching them have sex.
Boom.
I think check and mate, as far as
I'm
concerned.
No, I enjoy seeing the act of what it is that I would like to be involved in.
Right, but if you take a step back and you're looking at a man fuck a woman, but you got double the tits, where can you go wrong?
Listen, people who are into interracial porn, we presume they're attracted to interracial stuff. People who are into old people porn, like sex with old ladies, you figure they're probably attracted to old ladies.
But you can't control what your dick is into or not into. It doesn't make you bad.
Let Ross in because he's the boys of experience.
I think what you're... The only thing... you're assuming that everything involved in watching porn and masturbating to porn, because I don't know anybody who actually watches it.
As a right? connoisseur.
Okay.
Let me take some.
It's very interesting. That's, that's fascinating. I've got to go. But you're assuming it's all about sexual feelings. And there's other feelings that go on. Some people are like heavily into the shame that goes along with it. And all of a sudden you get that icky shame stuff that's going around the sex thing. Norton told me that, you know, is that it's
Jim
not,
Norton.
Sometimes it's not about the sex, it's about the shame.
Yeah.
You know, I was never really into porn, actually. To be honest with you, I was never a porn guy, so.
You don't say.
Even if you were to watch porn, it's likely, Dan, that he wasn't watching for the man involved, he was watching for the woman involved. You would be just as turned on by a man and a woman as you would be with two women.
I will confess that I do find the huge dicks fascinating. Like, I do say, oh my God, that's like just like
it on a woman's body. Your fucking mind will explode.
I find them intimidating.
Wait, so Ian Fidance.
Put it in some panties.
Put a G-string on it.
Just to explore a little bit more.
I think it's interesting when a penis is large enough that you can actually use it to hang a woman's clothes on.
Winter coat.
Ian,
Take that off. Where am I gonna hang your blouse? Oh, right here.
I did that with an ex-girlfriend. We were dating like a couple weeks. I came out, I go, look, a towel rack. She was like, I can't.
Now when you say girlfriend,
anymore.
You mean a XX or a trans girl?
Regular gal. I came out to my
say
mom. I could say whatever I want. We can say whatever we want. That's all you're not supposed to say.
Ian is a member of the LGBT community. He can say these things.
You can too. I don't even think of myself as a member of that because I was in the closet for
Freak.
I got news for you. You can think whatever you want.
Ian. Now
you're Rachel Dolezal all over here.
The trans women that you're attracted to. Tend to be, you want a trans woman that looks exactly like a woman, except with a penis, or a masculine persona.
I like them passable.
Passable. Very.
My main, if I could find a trans Rihanna, or like a trans
that
Cardi
looks just
B.
like Rihanna, but with a penis.
So you're interracial trans.
So
guy.
You like, you like.
I've never been with a white
you like
man or trans woman.
You like 3% of transgenders.
Yeah. Real niche market for me.
The more passable, the better. Is that fair to say? Or a little masculine is okay.
So what I'm hearing is that when Backpage shut down, it really ruined your life.
Oh, I was in a state of mourning. I mean, let me tell you. Backpage shut down. I was all right. I went to Craigslist Casual Encounters, and it didn't work. I went into a spiral. I was Googling replacement casual encounters.
Yeah, because
please help.
When you're into a fine niche of humanity that way, how are you going to find? There's no bar for that.
You
need to go to Backpage.
Yeah. No, you need to go online. I'm sure there's you get on Tinder.
No, but
I see
what he was talking about.
Oh, I see.
Tinder all the time. I see trans people.
Grindr. Yeah, but people might find.
Yeah, but it's hard because then, you know, you got so many people swiping and then guys don't know that they're trans and then they find out and they get a bad experience, you know. So like it's I'm not gonna say my life's tough. I love dating women too. I love women. I mean it's hard to find.
What's it like when you tell a woman about your proclivities? How does that work?
I mean some
how much how much up front are you? When are you up front?
I gotta be up front. And it's funny because you tell these things and you get a reaction, you can't tell if it's homophobia or germophobia. You know, because people can say all they want, like, yes, queen, I love LGBT rights, whatever, but then you're like, yeah, I have sex with men. I wanna have sex with you, and they're like, let's take a step back. And you're like, oh, okay. Is this homophobia? Are you homophobic or
now,
are you germophobic?
Do you have intersection? Are there those who have no problem with it whatsoever?
Oh, completely. Yeah. I mean, I'm safe all the time. I'm not a monster. Like, I get tested every couple months. I always wear protection.
Why do you get tested every few months? You don't always wear protection. Nobody gets tested every few months when they always wear protection.
I'm a huge germaphobe.
Look at me.
I'm very, very neurotic about germs. And I have a huge fear of STDs, which makes hookup culture very difficult because a lot of it's not protection.
Now, do you talk about this in your comedy act explicitly?
Yeah.
And maybe you could sub for Laster.
I don't know.
Okay, so I have a question. Are your parents living?
My dad is not. My mom is.
And now this is not what killed your dad, right?
Well, yeah, how much time do we have?
I couldn't get that quick enough out.
I really don't understand Noam's...
I want to hear
Noam's...
How close?
We talk to gay people all the time, and Noam somehow thinks this is weird somehow.
Well, it's different. It's very different.
If it's not weird, then why are we having him on the show for this?
Because
we don't usually have people on who, you know, he's on because he likes spaghetti. It's obviously there's something notable about it. That's why he got booked because of this.
I thought he was a straight guy that likes trans women.
But it's interesting.
It's interesting, but it's not. Your joke about the father dying because of the son.
Because many fathers would.
If your son is already sucking cock. What the hell's the difference whether it's a guy or a bi?
Are you asking for a friend?
I mean, a guy or a trans.
Listen, can you tell us? Tell us about your father. Go ahead.
What about him?
What was it? What did he know about your sexuality?
No, he died when I was 8.
Okay, yeah. So my mom knows. And how did she
when
feel
I told
about
her, I mean, my mom.
How specifically did you tell her? Like,
I mean, dude, I didn't come out about this shit until 2 years ago, year and a half ago. I'm 33 now. Mm-hmm. I held it in for a long time. I thought I was going to die with all this shit inside me. And so therapy helped out a lot, you know, because it was a ton of shame. I grew up in a very Catholic Italian household, you know, a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, a lot of self-hatred and everything. It came out, and ever since then, my relationship with everyone in my life has been elevated a million times. Now, my mom and I are closer now more than ever.
They say mothers usually have a feeling about their son's sexuality.
She didn't know what I was, but she knew I had a sadness and, like, a pain that she just couldn't put her finger on, you know? And it's so funny because now I'll tell my mom, I'll be like, Mom, you know, I'm going on a date. And she goes, oh, that's nice. Is it a born girl or one of your friends?
I think that's so sweet.
Yeah.
It's so sweet. Yeah.
It's so adorable. I think that what's interesting.
You're lucky.
To answer your question. What's interesting, not so much that he's into... Once he established that he was bisexual, I think being into trans women is basically...
An extension. A given. Right.
I think that the fact that you're bi is interesting because I don't meet a lot of bi men. You meet, obviously, bi women, especially here in the village, and women seem to be more...
There's a huge pushback. You meet them, but they don't. You don't know that.
Well, that could be it, too. But I don't meet a lot of men that say that they're bi.
There's a huge pushback in... the straight community, gay community, with bi men. Like women, it's totally like, yeah, whatever. But then guys, it's like, nah, man, you're fucking gay. Just say you're gay.
I confess, I kind of believe that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Listen, so many people think when you masturbate without any porn, what are you thinking about? A man in a dress, a woman?
Listen, I got ADD, everything. It is just a fucking...
Can I ask, what was the straw that broke the camel's back for you to finally be open about it? Or was there a particular event?
I had a nervous breakdown.
You had a nervous breakdown?
Yeah.
What is it? Jeff, you want to join us? Speaking of nervous breakdowns, what exactly is a nervous breakdown?
I had a total break. Rip with reality.
So you
I didn't
like,
know what was real, what wasn't. Because I didn't know, because I had come out in therapy. Yeah.
So describe what it's like to be.
I mean, it's scary.
What do you see that's not real, that you explain it. This is very interesting.
I was in therapy for a while. When I started to tell people my personal life about everything, and then they like accepted me with like love and understanding. I never thought that was possible. I thought I was gonna tell people, and they go, "All right, fuck you, get out of my life. You're fucking gay. Get out of here." You know. And so when people loved me, I had like a snap in my head because I never knew I could be like truly myself and happy. And I thought I was involved in a prank show. I truly thought that everyone in my life was a producer, and the big prank was that, see, you thought you could be happy and you're not.
So you were so sure you couldn't be happy that when you actually were happy, you
and
thought
I was truly
you had
my authentic self.
It caused a nervous breakdown.
I had a nervous breakdown.
Isn't the human mind just remarkable?
Well, you know,
it was insane, and it was the greatest.
I'm gonna go as far.
It was the greatest thing that ever happened, man. Ever since then, it's elevated every aspect.
And
of
how
my
did
life.
You come back from the nervous breakdown?
After a few days, I thought people were sending me signals. I thought a guy after a show was a producer for the show, and he's like, you know, we need to meet up. And I was like, yeah, whenever you want, man. Here, take my email. He emails me right away. I'm like, oh, cool. We're going to talk about this project, about this reality show we're on. He was just a gay man.
Inbox full of dick pics.
He was just a gay man trying to get me back to his apartment.
Yeah.
There's a project.
Yeah.
We're working on a project.
Well, come to my room.
Jeff
Leach
joined us. I forgot that you were in town.
They like guys that look like they're transitioning, so they brought me on.
Yeah, what's up? Shave that beard and we can talk, pal.
So now Ross Bennett is here, and I haven't seen Ross in a while. Now, you have a new comedy CD?
Yeah.
Well, tell us. Yeah. So go ahead. Tell us about it.
Oh, well, it's called Not If You Were the Last Man on Earth. And you know what? I don't know if you know about the Acme Comedy
Club.
Would
you ever say? Go ahead.
The Acme Comedy Club in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Great club. And every year they do a thing called Crash and Burn, where they get four headliners, and you make a commitment to not do any material. You spend the whole week developing
great.
A new act. So all four
that's
comics
awesome.
Have 20 minutes of fresh material they've never done. And by the end of the week, you know, you got a pretty good, you know, new 20 minutes.
You got a tight two.
So I had I did that, and I came out with 20 minutes, and that was the heart of the new CD. And then within a year, I took a bunch of other stuff that came up, and I created it.
Oh, that's killer.
And it's old school in terms of, it's not like one theme throughout the whole thing. You know, that just happens to be...
Isn't that one of your jokes?
One punch. It's one punchline in my thing. I had a funny picture of myself looking unattractive. I know. Where would he find a picture of himself looking unattractive?
Now, you're looking good these days.
Thank you very much. And that's what it is. It's got a lot of, you know, I'm proud of it. It's my second CD.
We share something, by the way. Minnesota and New York State, we both border Canada. It's and you know, and I feel I'm a better person for it. I love Canadians. They're good-natured. They're guileless. My only problem with Canada is their coins. We seem to have fairly decent border control with Canada for people, but their coins, it's like a sieve. They just come and go at will. And I don't know about you folks, if I get a Canadian quarter in my change, my day is shot. Because for the rest of the day, it's like I'm a kid, I'm playing tag, and I'm it, because I'm trying to give it to somebody else. You like that? Now, sometimes I get a Canadian quarter, I don't even know I got it. It goes in my pocket. I won't see it all day. I mean, do you hear what I'm saying? I've been it all day. Then I'm going to buy a newspaper, and you reach in your pocket for a regular quarter, and you get this other thing, and they're deceptive. Same size, same weight, but a different picture. And your mind will try and justify it. Oh my gosh, I just noticed, apparently, George Washington was a transvestite.
And compared to the CD you made, was this more fun to make? Since it was dealing with so much of that stuff that was kind of in the moment and everything, rather than like specific material you were planning out?
I don't know. I have no idea what you're saying. What was that?
He's picturing you in a dress. He's having trouble.
I'm saying because you said that you took half this material and it was just made up over a week and then you built it around that. Were you more excited about this than actually like planning out another?
Oh, I mean the CD.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I teach a class now.
Oh,
you don't know I teach a class, but I teach a class.
A comedy class, I'm assuming.
And thank you very much.
All right,
and,
just to be sure.
It's second year law.
It's not English. It's
second year law.
Torts.
Business ethics.
Flies out of the Philippines.
Yeah. So but at the heart of it is the difference between writing a joke and developing material. You know, you write a joke, you develop material. And that's what that week's about. It's about developing, but you only got a week to actually spend to develop it. After a year, it went to a whole nother place. And I love the process. Of creating new stuff. A lot of the other stuff on it is stuff I created here, like when I was working here a lot. And
awkward moment.
Huh?
Not awkward moment.
No, not in the least.
Not as you said that, Dan. Go ahead.
Not in the least.
Oh, my bad.
You know, I tell every comic like yourself who's like 10, 15, 20 years younger than I am, the day will come when you phase out of one place into someplace else. Every place you work eventually will stop working with you, and that's not a bad thing.
Well, let me say about that you know, some comics like you know, I don't know, Greer Barnes, you know, they're just always, you know, they never seem to have any decay in what they do. But other comics, especially the ones who try to venture out of their comfort zone and are into the process, they have their ups and downs in terms of how they're doing in front of the audience. They know it themselves. They don't need me to tell them. And, you know, one of the things that I'm sad or that I'm disappointed about this success of the Comedy Cellar now is that we don't really have that luxury of having that stage time for people who want to try new stuff or want to venture, you know, and do stuff like that. So people sometimes, SD will stop booking somebody for a while because they, you know, they're not doing so well. They're trying some things out. But I would not want to discourage anybody who that happens to from, you know, say, hey, you know, I want to come back, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's not like a permanent stamp. You know, we had this thing with Sean Patton, who's a very, 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 apparently very doing great these days. He's one of my favorites. I think he's really one of the real gifted people I've seen. Like gifted, you know. And he had his ups and downs here because he can't be harnessed. You know, he does what he wants, and sometimes it's working, sometimes it's not. And he's been in and out, and, you know.
Whenever I worked here, I always felt the pressure to do my A material.
Yeah, that's not a great pressure.
Always go out there with a baseball bat, beat the shit out of the people, and I was okay with that. But a point
Don't literally beat the shit out of them, because then you won't get booked for 3 months.
Huh? That's what happened to Jeff, yeah.
But you brought a baseball bat?
You know, beat the shit out of
them. He did have a, he had a altercation.
An altercation, no, yeah, with an angry audience.
I mean, it's anyway. With the English accent, it sounds fancy, but it was...
A Donnybrook.
We drooled at dawns.
One thing about the Comedy Cellar is I don't see ageism here.
No.
I don't see ageism here.
It's all
Eddie-ism,
about...
really.
You have the luxury of being able to choose from the very greatest talent every week that's available within, you know, 50 miles of where we are. And I would not get work like for a week or something. And I'd look at the schedule and I'd say to myself, who do I think I should replace on this schedule?
Besides Natterman.
Amy Schumer I'm going to replace. Todd Berry I'm going to... You know, these people are geniuses.
It'd be nice if you could.
Huh?
And by the
He's
way...
He's never happy.
And there's always a certain number of spots that are accounted for that are not on the lineup that nobody knows
about.
Yeah,
yeah. So, I mean, yeah. I never had... I knew people had, like, really big issues. You know, they feel rejected or whatever. By the time I got here, I've been rejected so fucking much that it didn't make any difference. You know, I was just glad for what I had.
But, you know, as I'm looking at you, I mean, we know each other, and of course, it's not. I mean, I want everybody to have happiness in their life, and I'm not, and I feel bad if anybody wants work or doesn't work. But for my own selfish reason, I'm always worried. I'm saying, you know what? If this dude is killing, and we're not using him, we're fucking up here at the Cellar. So you know, I always want to encourage everybody to stay within the orbit of the place, and not just say, okay, I'm done with the Cellar. Not to be nice to you.
Oh, yeah.
Not to be nice to you. It's because I'm a smart businessman.
I've never felt I was done with anything, but I'm like really okay. I always tell comics that when something goes away like that, that's as much part of the business. You guys are talking about the Borgata, right?
Yeah.
I worked there every year for 15 years, and they changed the booker, and now I don't work there now. But for 15 years, I made great money. You know, at a great gig, and I was really pleased for it. And it's okay to move on.
Well, you have a great attitude. That's with the aid of therapy also.
Well, I don't want to be that guy, and we know those guys. My heart goes out to them, who's bitter, in their 60s, because they can't get what they used to have.
What about if you're that bitter in your 30s? Well, is that all right?
Obviously, you're from the UK.
There you go. All right. It's okay. It goes with the good.
Are you living here now, Jeffrey, or are you visiting us?
Always living
like
here,
Dan. He doesn't
Dan.
Understand English.
You don't know that?
What's that?
He said it slow.
Do
you like it here?
No,
in
I thought you had gone back to England.
No, man. I live in Los Angeles now. I've been out there for 8 months.
Oh, so you are... Not living in New York.
I'm
so
not
you
in
are
New York.
Visiting us.
I'm visiting you, yes. Yeah.
You're visiting us.
So, now, Jeff, are you in therapy too?
No, I should
Jeff
be.
Jeff has said many it's times.
I self-apply therapy.
Have you ever been in therapy?
No, I should, though.
But, Jeff, don't
I'm,
you
I'm
say...
I'm aware that I should.
You're
I
one of the few people
thing.
On stage that talks openly on stage about being a depressive.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, certainly several comics fit that category, but you're the only one I've seen that actively goes on stage and says, I am a mental case.
Well, Brits are very comfortable with that.
And yet,
I'm breaking boundaries, Dan. I'm glad you're pointing it out.
But
it's very
yet
sweet
you,
of you.
But you haven't been in therapy, though.
No.
Well, why is that? Is it just... You don't feel like paying for it?
I haven't got the money. Do you know what I mean? I've got no health insurance. How are you going to get therapy without health insurance?
Well, you were in England a long time. They have it free there.
Just do some sobbing. That costs nothing. Just go home, rocking a little
ball. But the English go to the pub, don't they? And they just drink their sorrows.
We go to the pub. That's true. Yeah, alcoalism is rife in our country.
Well, you think about this American...
Wait, I'm asking. If you went to therapy and you were in the office and the receptionist, you know, you have to fill out a form and the form said, you know, give us the top three reasons, the top three things about yourself you would hope that this therapy would help you with. What would they be?
More acceptance of myself, I think. been a bit more comfortable
so
in who I am.
So not to change yourself, just be comfortable.
Be more comfortable in who I am, yeah. Be a little bit happier in that. But that's true of every comic. That's like a comic's process. Until they find their comic voice, they haven't become comfortable in themselves. Do you know what I mean? I think that's
right,
why I'm probably
so
drawn to this profession.
Right, but it's not so much acceptance as it is allowance.
No one's accepting in comedy. They love to shit on each other. Like, it's part of the banter.
No, accepting yourself and allowing yourself to be whomever you are.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That's one. Go ahead.
That's one. Second thing would be maybe forgiving my parents, their part in maybe why I am, and accepting my own, how it's my own fault rather than not anyone else's.
But you see, you're actually all those answers are kind of ducking. Forgiving your parents for what they made you, being accepting of yourself for what you are, but you're not actually saying what is the underlying thing that they made you or that you need to accept.
Oh,
what is that
deeply undeserving. I think I'm worthless all the time.
You seem to function very well where you are.
Yeah,
your
yeah.
Your therapy's about being about you can't when you can't do that.
Yeah.
When you have a fucking nervous breakdown, when you're depressed all the time, when you can't leave your if you're depressed and you're able to function in the world,
yeah, but
God
also,
bless you.
Come on, you look at someone like Robin Williams. There's a man who coped and learned ways to deal for decades, and then at some point, clearly he wasn't.
Well, but he was also ill. He was ill.
Yeah, well, he wasn't at a right place.
No, not mentally
ill.
He had the beginning of Parkinson's, and right. he had issues.
He was in serious trouble. Yeah.
But the point still stands that some people seem to be coping and depending on
well,
just
let me see what I see in you. There's an extrovertism, if there's such a word to you,
yeah.
It's not unique to you, that I always find fascinating. Like, you post a lot of pictures of your ass on Instagram.
Well, I'm glad that you've been looking.
And I said, why is he posting pictures of his ass?
What is
good
ass.
Are you
good
signed
ass,
up for
though.
His Instagram?
No.
Okay. You're going to break the internet. Yeah. No. It's a good ass or a bad ass. It's not the point. I mean, it'd be more interesting that you posted a badass if you had a badass. But I'm just saying, like, what of all the things, what compels you to say, I want to show my ass on Instagram?
First of all, it's interesting that that is the thing that most people within the comedy world, yourself included, other comics, etc., notice those posts. Like, oh, Jeff's posting another picture of his ass.
Because
which makes up maybe 1 in 100 of my posts on social media. The rest will be clips from comedy, shows, funny little videos, short character clips, etc. But people don't comment on those. It's the ass picture.
Well,
but the reason I do it is because I have a nice ass, and because I have two opportunities to garner fans. One is through my comedic ability on stage, and the other is being attractive enough maybe that some people might just like who I am.
Ah,
you know?
That's a good answer.
I use social media as a place. It's a very shallow place to garner, you know, viewers and new audience members, and some of them are just
I bet they get a lot of likes.
I want to fuck this guy. It gets more likes than any of my comedy posts.
Well, and being depressed, that little shot of dopamine feels good, right?
People like looking at
it. That's why you think you have a good ass. You might want to reevaluate that logic.
That might have more to do with your comedy. But
exactly.
Sorry.
You don't need to apologize to me. It's all right.
As long as
it's the
table.
You just got
it's the table. I didn't mean it.
I'm actually still working at the Comedy Cellar, so I'm not offended. Don't worry.
It never occurred to me that was the reason that you were trying to attract an audience based on your physical appearance.
Now you get mostly
a little bit,
you get a lot of attention mostly from gay men or from women with those ass.
Both.
And you have no gay ink, or do you?
No. I don't.
No.
I'm not into.
No, he just
men.
Sounds it.
I'm not into men. I just.
He seems like he might be, but I wanted to verify.
I'm comfortable around gay men because I kind of grew up with lots of friends in that world, or the music world. You know, a number of people around the table might know is. It's very synonymous with gay culture and late night culture that has a lot of
androgynous.
Whilst we have you here, this is fortuitous because I would, if we could, just talk briefly about the royal wedding.
Oh, you sure. We'll have to make it brief because I didn't watch it. I don't care about it. I'm more interested to know how Noam got on with Milo Yiannopoulos.
Well,
have you talked about that?
You
didn't do it in the end.
He didn't do the show here with Milo. He did it elsewhere.
I wanted to know what you thought of that guy. Because I was when I saw your two names on the lineup, I thought, oh, this is going to be magical.
That Milo thing was such a bad experience from beginning to end.
Really?
Yeah. First of all, we flirted with the idea of having him on. Now, I wanted to have him on because, you know, I'm into politics and he's famous and it's good for ratings and I like to talk to anybody, whether they're a KKK member. I kind of prefer to talk to people.
It's an interesting conversation to have, yeah.
But sure. He was very, very cruel to Leslie Jones. So, and Leslie Jones is, you know, a part of the family here. So I was going to do it, but only on the condition that somebody close to Leslie was willing to do it as well and kind of represent her and take him to task for the way he treated her. And we couldn't find anybody to do that. So I said, well, I'm not going to have him here. So, but I know Sherrod Small has a Race Wars podcast. So I said, let him, you know, we'll put him in touch with Sherrod.
Yeah.
So then I went on that podcast, and it was this other guy there who I like, Tommy. But and Tommy's been great on my podcast, but Tommy just started. It was Tommy's gay and Milo was gay, and they just got into it, and they would not stop bickering and yelling and screaming at each other, and it kind of ruined the whole thing.
It became a screaming match. Two gay men with opposing ideas.
And Milo kept calling
him
Susan, and like, I mean, all the things you should never ever say out loud that you assume are the way gay people would act.
Yeah.
This is exactly the way they were acting. Yeah,
right,
okay,
right,
you know?
Right.
By the way, was it you that snored when I brought up the royal family gnome?
Yeah.
Because so, I would like, because you do that on occasion, I would just like to respectfully request that you never do that again.
It wasn't about you. It was about the royal wedding. I find it so boring.
Well, you know, you go on and on about some arcane little issue with
the
Republican Party.
I'm criticizing the wedding is a bore.
Dan, are you a
how long you guys been married?
He's unbelievable. Yeah.
Dan Natalie looks like a French Duke. You look like a French Duke.
No, I look a French Duke.
I
thought you said a French Jew.
The royals. You like royals. You look like one of those too as well.
I think I like the royal family. I think, to me, they're a living museum. I think it's fascinating that these people, even though they have no current power, really, but they are descended from people that made history.
I'm descended from Abraham.
Yes, well, you may be. But,
Alexander the Great, in my heritage.
William and Harry's great-great...
We've all got a guy.
What's that?
I said we've all got a guy.
No, go ahead.
William and Henry's great-great, however many great-grandfather, was George III, from whom we declared independence and fought a war. I find that interesting.
Yeah.
And I find that it's a window
into another world.
And I find it, quite frankly, very interesting.
The wedding
itself.
I want to
hear about gay people being catty. Come on.
Did you? I mean, there was a lot of that at the royal wedding, too.
The wedding itself was not... You know, it's just...
Which is what the subject was.
The wedding is also interesting because it's all that pomp and old school
There's
shit.
There's only one thing interesting about that wedding. He married a black woman.
Well,
I was getting to that.
All right.
Which, to me, is...
sexy.
Well, she is sexy as shit. Yes, she is sexy. Yeah.
Did you see the side eye the queen was giving?
Well, I saw that meme where she was...
Eye. Yeah, but can't anyone get side eye if they're getting pictures taken of them
not
every
anymore.
Second of the day?
No, you're absolutely right.
Right?
All
like, you can make
no
anyone... Anyone have any reaction if you're just filming them all of the time?
We had a total fake news incident this week at the Comedy Cellar.
Really?
I spent the last 36 hours screaming at reporters.
What happened?
There was this thing that somebody walked out during Aziz's set. Did you see it?
No.
It was in the Daily News or something. It never happened.
What happened? Did he buy them the wrong glass of wine or something?
No, it just never happened. And
that was my friend. He wasn't in the show. He was going to the restroom. He was eating up here. He went in and then came back out.
Well, they say it was a woman. But anyway, it never happened.
But where was that? I didn't read that. Where was that?
In the Daily News.
Well,
and then it got picked up by Fox
what
News.
What a fucking joke.
But that's good publicity for the Comedy Cellar.
No, it's not.
Why not?
Because
someone walks out of, you know.
One person walked out, but everybody now knows that Aziz comes here.
It's about the negativity of what's going on at the Comedy Cellar.
You know, you should co-host the show. You're very smart. No,
thank you.
I'm sorry. No, I'm kidding. It's because I don't.
Come on.
I'm smart, not like people say.
But overall, I think it's a positive for the Comedy Cellar.
Yes, but I don't want Aziz to.
You're not welcome.
Yeah, I was unhappy about how it might make Aziz feel. I don't think Aziz cares. But anyway. It's just striking how.
But it is.
Has Louis gone back up yet?
No, this is like my fifth or sixth experience with this, where somebody's come down in the paper, and it's absolutely untrue, demonstrably, and they do not care.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, there's no sensationalism.
My buddy with the Schumer thing.
Now there was.
Can we talk briefly? That's your friend.
But there was a woman at FoxNews.com I spoke to today, Kathleen somebody, and she did care. So I have to give her. Props for that.
Yeah, shout out to Kathleen. Great. What's her name?
Yeah.
You were friends with that guy at Caroline.
Yeah, Brandon Sagalow.
Now,
this is good. Go
the
ahead.
Story is. Can I just briefly?
You
outline?
Tell the story, and then I'll tell
I'll
the
tell
truth.
The story as it appeared in the news.
Go for
and
it.
Then we
got to
wrap it up. We're
let's hear
here,
it, Danny.
Well,
this is fascinating.
This gentleman.
TMZ Natterman.
What's his name? Tagalog.
Brendan Sagalow.
Brendan Sagalow was on stage performing as a headliner at Caroline's, and his friends and family were in the audience amongst others. And Amy, according to the story, came in and said, I'm Amy Schumer. I want to go on. I'm hosting SNL. I need to practice my set for SNL. And she won. And then she screamed out to, what's his name again?
Brendan.
Brendan. She said, tag along, can I go on for 5 minutes? And Brendan said, okay. She went on, did her 5 minutes, got off. Then Brendan went back on and did his thing. But that was the story as I read it in the news, that she kind of went in and bullied her way on stage or whatever.
She didn't really bully her way on stage.
But what's the real version of events?
She walked in and went to the back and asked who was on stage, and they said, Brendan Sagalow. And she goes, well, I'm going to try to get up for my... she had to do her 10 minutes for SNL. And they were like, well, his whole family's here. And she goes, well, you know, I have to do this real quick. And she goes, Brendan, it's Amy Schumer. Can I go up and do 10 minutes? He goes, yeah, sure. And she did it. And then he allowed it.
But
and then he ripped on her
on
a bunch.
Yeah,
she put him on the spot.
Put him on the spot. What are you going to say? No, get
yeah,
fucked.
Yeah. Put him on the spot. And then he went up, did his time afterwards. He crushed. Really great, whatever. But then the papers played it out. Like, she swung dick and, like, belittled everyone and then was like,
I
made Amy
you would have liked it if she did swing dick, wouldn't you?
I'd have been there in a heartbeat, pal. Let me
tell
you. But
the paper also, I don't know if the paper said it or somebody said that they were friends and had discussed this prior.
That's not true. They're not friends. Well, they didn't discuss it
prior.
Was
that in the paper or did I?
That was in the paper. Okay. That's what they put in the paper. And then, like, all these like blogs and shit reach out to him. And to his credit, the whole time he was like, I don't care. It was, what am I supposed to do? Say no? Yeah, right? And a bunch of people made it negative. Like, she was like a bitch about it. It's like, well, you know, no offense. And I told him this. We were sitting over there, and I told him. I was like, dude, you're doing your Breakout Horror series. It's like a glorified bringer at Caroline's. Your whole family's there. Your friends are there. Cool. But she's running her set for SNL. That's, like, important. She's got to run it everywhere. It sucks that it happened, but, hey, man, shit happens. She did it to you. Someone did it to her. You'll probably do it to someone else.
What day of the week was this?
It was a Tuesday night at 7:30.
Dan, was this good publicity for Caroline's?
Yeah, I think so.
No, because Amy probably was pissed that
it got out.
Caroline's is not responsible, and Amy knows that.
Well, it seems to me they spoke to somebody at Caroline's. It seemed like
there was a rat.
Somebody in the audience did.
See,
probably.
I don't like these rats. And I don't like these people that just talk to the news and get these stories out.
You sound like Trump.
It's fucking awful. Yeah. Okay, Trump, do something bad that I disagree with. So far, he's doing a great job. So.
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, Jeff, do you have any notes? Jeff, you seem to feel that Amy might have not overstepped her bounds.
But you're not going to. Can you? Okay, go ahead. She loves Jeff already. Go ahead.
That Amy might have put him in an awkward position.
Once upon a time, she did.
I don't think what she did was that bad. I really don't think it's that big of a deal.
Here's my personal opinion on big name acts. I think any big name act doing a drop-in spot and taking 10 minutes and that bumping everyone down by a couple of minutes is perfectly fine. You've earned the right to do that. If the venue wants to let you do that, that's their decision as employers. It's when an act goes up and says, I want to do 10, which has happened on occasion
and
with a big name act.
Yeah, yeah, and then 4 hours.
Fucking 40, 50 minutes, and then people lose.
But he's the exception. Yeah. He's the exception.
I think it's all ridiculous. You all want to be that guy someday.
Well,
There's only one guy who bumps with utter humility, and that's Ray Romano, who practically just, he can't bear it. He has to make sure, because he's so nice.
I don't know anybody other than that one guy who does it for their own ego. They're always here for some reason.
Working on something.
They're working on something, you know, and I figure that's what
you
about.
And you have to do the work.
How I hate to be naive. I didn't have a specific person in mind, but you
said 4 hours.
Who did 4 hours?
Someone obviously did it. He's taking the truth. First of all, I was just making a joke because we're talking about Chappelle. Chappelle does four hours, but he always goes on last, and he doesn't say. He never says he's going to do 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And he actually says twelve.
He is working on stuff.
He goes on last.
He is because he'll record the whole thing, and from those 4 hour sessions, he'll glean a good 3 hours.
There you go.
Because he did like 3 hours on Netflix in 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how he does it. It's all right. Listen, this was a pretty good show.
I thought so.
I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, it was great.
Ross
Thank
says
you.
Not good, excellent.
All right. Well,
I was here.
We have to go.
Also, just one quick last plug for Ross Bennett. Please tell us where we can procure.
You can go on iTunes.
And it's called.
You know what I do?
And it's called.
Not If I Was the Last Man on Earth. If you just punch me in on iTunes, you get that album or you can get my other one.
Ross Bennett.
New York Country.
From Hornell, New York. He's an upstater, right? No, I don't know if you knew that.
And if you like nice asses,
do me a favor.
Great asses.
Can I, if you could listen to the Savage Snowflake podcast, that's a weekly podcast I'm doing.
Oh, yeah?
Or check out all the shows I've got here in New York over the next week at wonderful establishments like the Comedy
Savage Snowflake, that's good.
There you go, Savage Snowflake podcast.
You have that domain name?
Yeah, I got all of that. All of that business.
And of course, Ian Fidance.
Yeah, you
on Grindr. Check him out.
Check me out on Grindr. What's you can get my dates? IanFidance.com. I'm opening for Nikki Glaser this weekend at Vermont Comedy
What's
Club.
What's your screen name on Grindr?
They don't have screen names, Dan.
Okay.
But mine says Dom Top for Sissy Bottoms.
Sean Donovan.
Good night, everybody.
I love that.